Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Fidelity Bank PLC 9 months 2020 earnings call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Nnamdi Okonkwo. Please go ahead, Nnamdi.
Thank you. Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this call. My name is Nnamdi Okonkwo. I'm Managing Director of Fidelity Bank. On this call with me, I have the CEO designate and other executive committee members. I'll be introducing the CEO designate at the end of this call. Okay, so I'll go straight to the highlights of the presentation today. We closed the period with a PBT of 21.3 billion, which translated to 3.7% growth from the restated PBT of 20.6 billion in the 9 months of 2019. We stated our 9 month figures from 23 billion. Our 9 month 2019 figures were stated from 23 billion to 20.6 billion. And I will explain that now. It was actually due to the impact of first time implementation of IFRIC 21 levies, which we commenced in H1 2020. Those who were in our H1 call will recall that we did explain that previously, AMCON charge was amortized over 12 months. However, with the implementation of IFRIC 21, the 2022 year AMCON charge of 11.9 billion was recognized 100% in this reporting period. In addition, full year 2019 AMCON charge of 10.4 billion was recognized in the comparative period. Hence, the reason our 9 month 2019 figures were restated. So, without the adoption of IFRIC 21, our actual PBT for 9 months 2020 would have been 24.3 billion, compared with 23 billion originally reported in the 9 months of 2019, which would have translated to 6% growth in PBT. Gross earnings dropped by 3.7% to 155 billion naira due to a combination of lower interest and similar income caused by the lower yield in the market and a drop in fee income. Though net fee income declined by 1.3 billion, fee activity-based income lines recorded double-digit growth in Q3. And this underpins the improving business activities in major sectors and the increased digital banking adoption by our customers. Understandably, during this pandemic period and without this disruption, a lot more customers use digital channels. So our trade income increased by 48.4% quarter on quarter. Account maintenance charge increased by 42.4% quarter-on-quarter also. Digital banking income, not surprisingly, increased by 20% quarter-on-quarter. So despite the growth in the key three lines above, net fee income still declined between Q2 and Q3. This was basically due to a reduction in FX-related income. A revaluation gain of about 6 billion we recorded in H1 2020 did not reoccur this time. Net interest margin came in ahead of full year guidance of 6.3%. This can be explained due to the significant decline in funding costs, which led to 25.2% decline in total interest expense and drove the growth of 28.8% in net interest income to 75 billion, despite 19.9% increase in interest-bearing liability. Over the period, our average funding cost dropped 230 basis points to 4%, from 6.3% in corresponding period of last year. Total operating income increased by 15.9% to 93 billion when compared to 5.8% increase in total expenses of 63.8 billion. So, however, the growth in operating expenses remains below headline inflation rate. Our cost income ratio now at 66.3%, down from 73.4% of 2019 corresponding period. On a quarterly basis, total operating expenses declined approximately 33% quarter on quarter due to recognition of the 2-year AMCON charge, which I had mentioned earlier. Profit before tax improved from 5.4 billion in Q2 to 9.4 billion in Q3. I will explain the three key factors that drove this. The first one, we had 3 billion growth in net interest income, driven by 1.2 billion growth in interest income and 1.8 billion reduction in funding costs. Second, within the 8.3 billion reduction in total expenses, it was principally driven by 9 billion reduction in regulatory costs experienced. Also, lower impairment charges in Q3 when compared with Q2 as the business environment improved. The three lines I just mentioned compensated for the FX income-driven decline in net fee income. In marking our balance sheet, we used market exchange rate in September of 385.8 to the dollar, and that led to 1.4% increase in total deposits and a 2.7% growth in the net loan book. Over the period, total deposits increased by 22.3% to close at 1.5 trillion. That was driven by approximately 19% growth in low-cost deposits, and that explains the 230 basis points drop in our average funding cost because we witnessed significant growth in low-cost deposits. Local currency deposits grew by 26%, while foreign currency deposits recorded 10% increase. For loans and advances, they increased by 12.9% to close at 1.27 trillion. However, the actual growth in loans was 10.2%. We witnessed currency adjustments, so the impact of that adjustment accounted for 2.7% of the loan growth. So the 10.2% actual loan growth was funded 50% from our deposits and 50% by intervention funds from both the central bank and other developmental financial institutions. So we have seen an increase in business activities after easing of the lockdown, and with this boss, over 50 billion naira in intervention funds to customers in the last 3 months, between July and September, in critical sectors to help them kickstart activities after the economic lockdown. So we continue to maintain a conservative stance from credit risk perspective in line with our guidance for the year. And that resulted in increase in total impairment charge. We increased our total impairment charge to 11 billion. If we compare this 11 billion increase with 100 million naira or 0.1 billion right back in the corresponding period last year, you would then understand why our cost of risk is at 1.2%, because we decided to adopt a conservative approach. We needed to take more provision, and that accounted for 1.2% cost of risk. On the forbearance window granted by the central bank, we are still within the base case scenario, a moderate case scenario. So we are seeing an improvement in business activity. We will continue to maintain a conservative stance until the end of the year. We are carefully watching developments So our NPL ratio declined marginally from 4.8% at half year to 4.7% in Q3. However, in the last 9 months, there has been a 63.2% growth in our Stage 3 loan book. This reflects both our conservative assessment of the sectors affected by the pandemic and the impact of the economic slowdown on our customers. Our other regulatory ratios remained above the required threshold. Liquidity ratio came in at 35%, up from 32% in H1. Capital adequacy ratio is at 18.2%, and by the time we close the year, we are projecting that our capital adequacy ratio should be above 20% due to the planned bond issuance as well as capitalization of our H2 profit. Okay, so let me just give some updates on the upcoming bond transaction. We have already sent a notice of early redemption to existing note holders of our local currency 30 billion naira bonds. We'll be having a content meeting, as some of you might know, with our euro bond note holders on Thursday, November 5th. We have appointed all the parties for the bond transaction. Our ticket size we'll be looking at will be between 50 and 75 billion. As we speak, we have already received Central Bank of Nigeria approval to proceed with the bond, and we are on course with other regulatory approvals. So on this note, and with this update, I'll hand over to Bola Hall, who will take us through further detailed presentation. After that, we'll be able to take questions, and then I'll do the closing by making some introduction of what will be happening post-December. Thank you. On this note, I'll hand over to Bola Hall now.
Okay. Thank you, Nambi. I'll just go straight to step. We just speak about the operating environment. A couple of red there. The protests sort of spiked the political risk. Declining yields. We're seeing some funds moving to alternative investment. Increased uncertainty. Oil prices have dipped below $40 over the last 1 week, both on the COVID scare and also on the rising production from Libya. But OPEC Plus seems like they're going to continue with the production cuts going into next year. So I'll go to slide 9. Nambi has spoken a lot about a lot of things here in terms of the profitability and deposit numbers. And so I'll move to slide 11, which just shows the year-on-year comparison. You see a 2% drop in total interest income. That's despite the fact that earning assets went up by about 15%. So that's just the impact of the lower yield environment. And then you see total interest expense is down 25%, and interest-bearing liabilities were actually up by almost 20%. So being able to keep funding costs down, that's been very important over this year. And so net interest income has come in at 29% higher. FX income was 70% higher. Digital banking income was down 29% on a year-on-year basis. And that's the impact of the review of the banker's tariff where the charges were brought down. But in terms of transaction velocity, we've seen a growth in that. And then operating income was up 19%. OPEX was up 5.8%, significantly below the rate of inflation. Impairment, man, we've spoken about that, and so that translated to a 3.7% growth in profitability. Now, slide 12 looks at the quarter-on-quarter numbers. You see a slight uptick in interest income coming into quarter three. And then when you look at the growth in the loan book, there's still some pressure from a yield perspective. Interest income on liquid assets is down 5.6%. Despite the fact that a lot of the liquidity we generated in Q3, including in the fixed income book. So you see quite some growth, both in treasury bills and the bonds portfolio. I'll speak about that when I get to the balance sheet. Interest expense on customer deposits was down about 18%, about 2.5 billion. About 1 billion out of this is coming from the reduction in the savings interest rate as well as a change in pattern of savings account customers. If you recall during our H1 call, we said we saw a higher number of customers doing less than 4 transactions during the lockdown period. And we've seen a change of that, and we see more customers doing more than 4 transactions, also customers moving from the alternative investment option. FX income was significantly down for two reasons. One, just spoken about it, the valuation gains. Also, in terms of the rate we used to mark the currency, there was a slight appreciation of the currency, and then our net open position was lower by about 8% over the period. So from about $300 million to about $275 million. Digital banking income was up 20%, basically due to increased adoption and more services were moving on those channels. And then other fee income was down about $3.3 billion, and a lot of that coming from the reduction in the gains on the fixed income book. Slide 13 just shows the balance sheet on a year-on-year basis, and you see strong growth across most of the lines. The savings book is almost at 40% growth as at 9 months. And then slide 14 shows a quarter-on-quarter growth. You see, treasury bills and bonds, those two lines have grown by about 78 billion. And then you come down, you look at the deposit book, it's up about 90 billion, and so about 78 billion of that went into that, even though you see a reduction in placement. So you also look at intervention funds. Fund lending is up 50.8 billion. And then you look at the growth in the customer loans from the Naira deposit bill, 59 billion. So out of that 59 billion, about 50.8 billion was funded from fund lending. And then just the marginal growth in the foreign currency loan bill. Slide 15 looks at a breakdown of gross earnings. For Q3, we saw an uptick from a transaction perspective and business velocity perspective. Digital banking income is up, account maintenance fees are up, trade income is up. On a year-on-year basis, they're all significantly lower, but we're seeing some traction coming in. Slide 16, 6 to NIM. We're guided for 5.5 to 6% this year. It's come down gradually from Q1 from 6.6% to 6.3%. And the good thing being that the reduction in the yield on assets, we've been able to compensate for that by significantly lowering funding costs, which is about 4% now, coming from 6.3% at the end of the financial year. Slide 17 speaks to the expense zone, and you see the major reason for the 17% decline in OPEX is reduction in MDS and AMCON costs from 10 billion in Q2. To 1.3 billion in Q3, which is basically just NDIC cost, because we're taking the whole AMCON cost as that in H1. And then the other lines are basically flat. Now, I'll go to slide 19, which speaks about the funding base. Strong growth on most of the lines, apart from other borrowings, you see strong growth on most of the lines, savings, demand, tenor deposits, online gain. And from a funding perspective, the deposit base was up 2.3%. I'll speak to that when I get to the slide on deposits. And deposits have moved to 64.2% of the total funding base. Now, slide 20 speaks to the deposit base. So if you look at foreign currency deposits, it's about 21% of total deposits at 317 billion. Our total deposit book is now about 1.5 trillion. Actual deposit growth is actually about 21%. About 1.4% was due to the currency adjustment. The local currency deposit growth was strong at 56%, and it's now about 1.2 trillion. And then out of that, we have about 487 billion in CIR. So our effective CIR rate on that deposit book is about 41%. Next slide. Slide 21 speaks to the retail banking group and very strong growth in the savings deposit book. And we don't expect to see as much strong growth going into quarter four for two reasons. The very low interest rate on that book, and then the funds for use by customers with alternative investment. But we don't think there'll be a material decline in the book. Retail assets have picked up gradually. We've been very careful there. And most of the lending we do here is the digital lending and salary account holders. Slide 22 looks at our liquid asset position. Liquidity ratio is at 35%, bumped up from 31% in Q1, 32% in H1, and then 25%. And if you look at a lot of the deposits we generated in Q3, we saw a lot of them going into the fixed income book and a lot of the funding for the loan book coming from the intervention fund. Slide 23 just shows the breakdown of the loan book. The gross loan book has grown by 13.3% on a year-on-year basis. And then slide 24 just shows the breakdown of the loan book into foreign currency and local currency. And you see the chunk of the local currency that's in the transport segment, where you've got investment financing and then the oil and gas segment. Slide 25 is just the quarterly trend of the loan book. And you see a growth in some select sectors. The government sector is up, and manufacturing sector is up. And the chunk of funds you see from the manufacturing group is coming from the online loan book. And slide 26 just shows a breakdown of the loan book. The local currency loan book is 56%. We ended the year at 58.8%. It's down 56% also because of the currency adjustment. So the real growth in loan book was about 10.2%. Nam is talking about that. And the foreign currency loan book is now almost 44% of the loan book. About 40% of loans created were via on-lending and intervention fund. And slide 27, let's show the breakdown of the loan book into stage 1, stage 2, stage 3. The stage 3 book is about 63 billion. It's moved materially from the end of the year due to the impact of the COVID on certain economic sectors. And so on slide 28, you see that book has bumped up from 38.6 billion to 63.1 billion. NPL at 4.7%, been fairly constant from Q1, but it jumped significantly from full year 2019 to Q1 because of the impact of COVID. So it jumped from 3.3% to 4.8%. The pressure points are still largely in the same areas, oil and gas, downstream, manufacturing, and the transport sector. And slide 29 just shows the NPL ratio for each of the various sectors. Downstream segment were about the highest at 20.6%, index down from 26% at the end of the financial year. And then you just look at the breakdown of the NPL book into local currency and foreign currency, and it's about 88% of it in local currency. Slide 31 shows the treasure point, I've spoken to that earlier, and slide 32 just shows capital adequacy, and it's at 18.2%. Tier 1 CAR is at 15%. Like Nnamdi explained, we're recognizing only 6 billion of our existing local currency bond. The bond will be paid off by the middle of November if we get the required consent by the meeting we're holding with the note holders on Thursday. We're planning a new bond. That new bond should come in quarter 4. We expect that new bond and capitalization of future profit to take CAR above 20% by the end of the year. And slide 33 shows the contribution of the business areas business segment. And then slide 35 basically speaks to our guidance. We've got 9 key indices there. We're on track on all the indices. Net interest margin at 6.3% is above the guidance of the lower end of 5.5, upper end of 6. The tax rate is below 5%. Loan growth is 12.9%. We're guided for 5.5 to 7.5. And we've seen an increase in that because of the intervention fund and interventions we've had to do for some of our customers coming out of the pandemic. Deposit growth is at 22.3%. We're guided for about 10%. We don't expect there to be a material growth in deposits going into the last quarter of the year. Cost to income ratio, we're guided for 70.3%. NPL ratio is still below 5%. Cost of risk is 1.2%. And the only one of the indices we're behind target is ROE. So we guided for 11.3%. We're currently on 11%. If we look at the trajectory for Q3 and Q4, we think we'll still be able to meet up on this. Thank you, and we'll now take questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star then 1 on your touch-tone phone or in the keypad on your screen. If you decide to withdraw the question, please press star then 2 to remove yourself from the list. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then 1. We will pause to see if there are any questions. The first question comes from Peter Mushangwe from Moody's. Please go ahead, Peter.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for the presentation. I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions. Firstly, just to find out your general view in terms of restructuring in the system, but also maybe more importantly for you, how much of your loan book have been restructured due to the coronavirus pandemic, and whether you are setting aside any provisions for such loans that might have been restructured due to the coronavirus pandemic. And secondly, I also wanted to find out if you could provide a bit of color at system level in terms of foreign currency liquidity, but also, for Fidelity handling foreign currency liquidity, maybe to inform us if there are any sort of restrictions around, depositors, how much they may withdraw or may take outside of Nigeria in terms of foreign currency. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll take the first question on the restructured loan book as a result of impact. If you recall, at our H1 2020 conference call, I mentioned that we have restructured about 32.5% of our loan book in line with the forbearance extended to banks by the Central Bank of Nigeria. So far, we've restructured additional 1 to 2% of our loan book since the economy is gradually recovering. So we do not expect significant change in the performance of the loan book. But to repeat, we've done 32.5% on account of the pandemic. Then the second part of the question has to do with FX liquidity.
Okay, so we've seen an improvement in Q3. I think that translated into the trade book, what we see on the trade book. Obviously, we're not yet at the level that it used to be, but from our own internal guidance purpose, initially in Q3, we're seeing customers making use of their foreign currency deposits to meet their own FX requirements. And we've sort of seen a slowdown in that. The book has been quite stable. Over the period, we did an early repayment of our Eurobond coupon, which is about $22 million, and we did that at the end of September. So from a foreign currency liquidity perspective, yes, customers have still not gotten all they need, but we've seen an improvement in Q3 compared to Q2. Thank you.
Peter, does that answer all your questions? Do you have any further questions?
That does it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Jerry Nuebo from Cardinal Stone. Please go ahead, Jerry. Jerry, you may proceed with your question. If your phone has been muted, please unmute your phone so that you can pose your question. Unfortunately, we cannot hear anything from Jerry's line. The next question comes from Tunde Abidoye from FBN. Please go ahead, Tunde.
Good afternoon, and thank you for hosting the call. I have a couple of questions. So on the first one, when I look at your loan book disclosure, it shows that a sizable portion of gross loans, about $7 billion, was migrated from stage 1 to stage 2. And this brings me to the question, what kind of trends are you seeing generally with your clients in terms of pressure points? Are you seeing more challenges with them? And where are the pressure points in terms of the sectors for this movement? Secondly, your non-interest income for Q3 was particularly soft relative to the prior quarters. I know that the specific challenges with some income lines and FX and fee income and all that. How should we be thinking of this line going forward, particularly for Q4? And then, lastly, for your special cash reserve with the CBN, I see it increased significantly to about $104 billion from around $59 billion in Q2. Is this part of your CRR, and what's your effective CRR at this point in time? Thank you. That's all for now.
In terms of the pressure points for the loan book, the areas where we see the pressure points are more of those who have an FX component. So if you look at the manufacturing book, there's some pressure points there. If you look at the transport book, there's some pressure points there. And obviously, there's been some pressure points on the oil and gas book. But generally, like we said on our H1 call, if we compare the quality of the book we were seeing in Q2 and look at the challenges of Q3, we think the business environment has improved. It's not yet like where we were in 2019, definitely, but there's been an improvement. In terms of fee income for between Q2 and Q3, look at where the major pressure points were. The major pressure points came from two places. Number one was FX inflation in terms of the gains because of the currency adjustment. And then the second one had to do with net gains on financial instruments. For Q4, we should see some gains on financial instruments for two reasons. Number one, we've increased our portfolio of fixed income instruments, and then we've seen interest rates come down. So there will be some gains there. From a digital banking income perspective, we expect there to be increased traction. But from an FX income perspective, we still expect that to be flat over that period. Number three is speaking about the social cash reserve. So that's basically looking at what we've done from a CRR lending perspective. So that 104 are loans we put out of our CRR with the central bank. So out of the 484, we've done CRR lending of about 104. If you walk that down and make it up the gross CRR of 43%, they have a net CRR of about 32%. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, just one final reminder. If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. We will pause to see if there are any further questions. Namdi, it seems like there are no further questions in the queue. Do you perhaps have any closing comments before we conclude?
Okay, thank you very much, everyone, for participating in this call today. Let me start by saying that, as you may be aware, this will be my last earnings call as the CEO of Fidelity Bank, as I'll be moving on after December 31st upon completion of my second contractual term as CEO of the bank. So I'd like to thank everyone for your support, and you've constantly put us on our toes over the last 7 years to introduce different plans, our strategic plans, our focus on execution success. We are particularly glad that we now rank sixth in the banking industry on key performance measures like total assets, loans, and deposits. We also rank seventh on profitability, after increasing our ROE from 5.1% in 2013 to 13% in 2019. So we've commenced our transition program since last year with changes to the board. And over this period, we've appointed about 5 new executive directors from the bank, showing the depth of the talent pool that the bank has. 5 people internally appointed as executive directors. For us, that simply says something about the seriousness and of our succession plan. Now, the MD CEO designate, Nneka Onyealife, was announced in July. The good news is that Nneka has been an integral part of the executive team for over 5 years. So a stranger is not coming to take charge. She's been part of this team. And you can rest assured that Fidelity will continue on our current performance trajectory, because this is basically in-house continuation, which is something that gladdens our hearts, knowing that you hit the ground running as a member of this team. Really, it's only the office nomenclature that will change. So Nneka has contributed strongly as the executive director in charge of Lagos and Southwest. Now she will be completely in charge of running the bank. We believe it could just be continuity. So thank you for making out time for this call, and if you require additional information, please reach out to our investor relations team. It's been very, very, very rewarding working here and giving our investors feedback from time to time. And thank you very much for your support. We don't take it for granted. Enjoy the rest of the day. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.